Drinking night
with a movie problem.
I'm Laura.
I'm Matt.
And tonight we watched
Intergalactic.
Yeah, which was really pretty.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just starting with the high point, the visuals in this film were absolutely stunning. I have a list of like seven different like cell phone light, Chinatown, smoke effects. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah, it seems to have taken a lot of visual inspiration from Into the Spider-Verse in terms of just the pop that they use to do with colors.
Into the Spider-Verse as well as Arcane with like the 2D animated effects composited into the 3D world. Mm-hmm. Really cool. Really stunning. And yeah, I completely agree. The Chinatown. Oh, should we summarize it?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a short summary. It's a rom-com about two African-American artists that meet in New York City. But the artist part doesn't really come into it. It's kind of their, you know,
The start of their potential relationship.
And then she wakes up one morning and he has a text from his ex-girlfriend that's like, "You forgot your sweater, come get it."
The timeline was a little unclear, but we'll get to that in a sec.
Yeah. And then it does revolve around one of these rom-com miscommunications where he went over to his ex-girlfriend's house because she called him because there was a rat. And then he left a sweater there. And then, but his new girlfriend thinks that the sweater, that the sweater being there means that he cheated on her. And then they don't really have a conversation, but you can't completely
X out the potential timeline of him sleeping with his ex and then 24 hours later him sleeping with the new girl with Meadow. I don't think that's the case, but you can't completely rule that out either. I'm walking away from that without 100%.
I think you're trying real hard to make this movie smarter than it was. Like, his ex says pretty clearly, "You slept with me less than a month ago," when he's telling her about this new girl that he's dating.
Yeah,
she didn't say you
yesterday.
Slept with me. Yeah, because yesterday he'd come over to get the rat.
Mm. Well, anyway, the backgrounds were stunning. And the texture of the characters were phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the costume design was amazing. And the effects were outstanding. And the light was so cool.
The music was also really good. This was actually co-written by Kid Cudi and Ian Edelman. Kid Cudi's a rapper whose music is featured prominently in the film. It's like a visual companion piece to this album, I guess, that he put out. And the music is really good. I'll definitely give it that.
Yeah, 100%. It vibed really well with the like street art aesthetic of, what was it, Mr. Rager?
Oh, Mr. Rager, the comic book character.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
I really liked every time we saw him. There's an extended dream sequence that was kind of just like, check out all these cool animation things we can do.
Yeah.
Which were visually very cool.
For context, the main character, what's his name?
I don't think I ever caught his name, actually.
It was Jabari. The main character, Jabari, is a comic book artist, former graffiti artist whose character, Mr. Rager, is being made into a comic. And he, falls into this relationship with Meadow, who's the photographer that lives next door that's about to sell her artwork at this, really cool art show, big New York gallery art show. And you actually have this really cool idea for a through line that didn't really come through, but...
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure where the movie was going in the first third of it, because you had a good portion of it taking place at the office and a good portion of it taking place going from party to party. And I thought that this was kind of going to be a movie where Jabari is being kind of pushed into like a little bit of a corporate bubble and he was having trouble keeping his individuality. Mm-hmm. And then he meets Meadow, who's got a girlfriend. I definitely thought she was dating her pregnant friend at first. And she's selling her art into galleries, but having trouble with the like salesmanship of being an artist of that caliber, and the two of them essentially navigating those two like mini industries in the art world and trying to figure out how to hold on to their individuality.
Yeah. The movie does hint at this, like, Jabari gets like friendly advice from a,
quote unquote,
from a like a colorist or a line artist. He didn't seem like a big time writer at the organization, but he's like Puerto Rican and he comes in like, hey, you know, like, you know, corporate here likes things to be light, bright and white. And your art is a little too edgy, you know? So like, you might need to like tone it down. And so there, there were those kind of hints, you know, at that there might be some kind of like, you know, something to say about, you know, the corporatization of art or, you know, what it is to like make it big as an artist, but also to make your art commercial while keeping it true to yourself. But, but then it kind of just all kind of turns out to turn around, turn on, and not just love story, but a love story that kind of turns on this, you know, one of these classic rom-com miscommunications that, you know, if they just talked about it instead of like, they have this, they have the awkward breakup and then she comes back and she's like, so Jabari, were you with her that day? And he goes, yeah, because he was at her house solving a rat problem. And he doesn't say, yeah, I went over to her house because she called me because she had a rat in the kitchen and I went over to help her with it. And we, that was all. There was nothing that happened between us. He just says, yeah. And then she hears that and thinks, oh, he slept with her, and gets mad and storms out. And it's, oh, no. A rom-com miscommunication, like the much more interesting story about art and the corporatization of art kind of gets left by the wayside.
Yeah, which is a shame because, you know, it's similar to Coda, which we watched last week, where it's like, there's a really interesting couple of storylines here, but we're just going to hang out and check out the romance.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, you know, romance is lovely.
Yeah, Boy, I mean, if you're into rom-coms, this movie definitely hits all the beats. I will say also that one of the things that it's funny because watching this movie, you could tell. I came in this podcast and I was like, the writers were Kid Cudi and you know Ian. I don't remember his name now. Ian Edelman. I looked that up after we watched the movie. You could tell midway through the movie that this movie was just no woman was involved in or consulted on the kind of writing of this film. Like, Meadow basically exists as this fantasy, really hot girl who's really into your art and likes smoking the blunt with you and going to the and drinking in parties. And she's really down to earth, but also sexy. And all of her conversation, and she's trying to sell this art, but all of the conversations that she seems to have in this movie basically revolve around Jabari and how she feels about Jabari. Like this, the Bechdel test joke popped and hit me harder in this film than it has in any other film I've seen in a while.
Yeah, I think I might actually have in my notes Manic Pixie Dream Girl, which I haven't written or even thought about since like Scott Pilgrim when it was up there, ironically.
Yeah, he when he meets her, he's down in a slump and can't figure out how to get, you know, Mr. Rager sold and then or how to write Mr. Rager. And then she inspires him.
But well, okay, because she's having a party and he's like really annoyed that she's partying at 3:40 a.m. So he goes, so wait, pause though. Yeah, there was a spectacular like moment where he's like looking at his phone and you see him reflected in his cell phone and the light reflecting. It was a beautiful shot when he sees it's 3:40 in the morning. Yeah. So he goes out and he goes and he knocks on his neighbor's door, goes inside, tries to find the host. And then like, it's really one of those like 90s, like time stops. And Meadow just, like, gets up in slow motion and slowly walks towards him. Yeah.
Well, and they visually give her a really cool corona of color. There's a lot of, like, flying through space visual metaphors for love in the film that are, again, like, I cannot, like, whoever was involved in the kind of cinematography of this, the coloring, you know, all, like, man, those... Get the awards out. Give those people more jobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The 3D cinematography, the virtual cinematography was so cool.
Yeah.
both in terms of how they sculpted the faces with light. And I wonder how much of that was actual light and how much of that was like painted onto the characters. And as they were moving around, those shapes moved around with them. Like it was, it was very Arcane inspired in terms of having the people textured painterly. And like, it's really interesting because it's lovely looking at how, like how they have a very distinct and defined nose, eyelids, lower, like, lower lash line. It's just a really cool style. Like, I love that that's becoming popular now. Like, 10 out of 10. It's great because I feel like for so long, we've, ever since Pixar, we've stepped into this 3D space. And for a while, Pixar was making grade A stuff and DreamWorks was making stuff that honestly looked like Pixar. And then Disney acquired Pixar formally. And then Disney's making stuff that looks like Pixar stuff. And everyone just seems to think that 3D art has to and always looks like Pixar. Mm-hmm. And we're finally seeing some really cool deviation from that style, both with Into the Spider-Verse, Arcane, and now this.
Would you compare that to the, you know, 1980s Don Bluth kind of taking the Disney artists out and Disney having so much defined what a children's movie could be and putting out this other stuff? Or am I way off of that?
I wouldn't say Don Bluth. I'd say UPA.
Okay.
Of essentially you say have more. People that are classically trained and then you have a traditional expectation of like, it has to be cute with big eyes and super fluffy and people being like, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And redefining the genre entirely with a very minimal style. UPA was like 60s that essentially broke away. Like Mr. Magoo, Jerry Boing Boing.
Yeah, wasn't there like did they do the Harold and the purple pen or whatever?
Yeah, a very minimalist like Bauhaus style where they were just like, well, backgrounds are expensive. We don't need to do those.
Yeah.
And so you have today a bunch of people looking at like Pixar and Disney and being like, that's hyper realistic and super expensive. How expensive was Moana's hair? Very expensive. We don't have the budget for that. But and finding different ways to tell compelling stories and to make them visually interesting that cut corners on the budget.
Yeah, make my more angular character models more aesthetically appealing, which this film absolutely does.
While we're on the topic of hair, yes, seeing one, everyone's hair was astoundingly gorgeous.
Yeah.
And then two, you even saw when Meadow had her hair down at her art show. It was just such a beautiful mess of just like texture, like squiggle texture. And it was just all layered on top of it. And it was so different from like Moana hair or anything that's going on. Yeah, they didn't try to make a
photorealistic hair.
No, they didn't have all the water, like the hair simulations. They didn't have like all of the different hair. Like 10 points to Disney and their Madrigal family. But like this movie just took a completely different approach to all of the different ways that hair can.
The hair was like a black marker art. Like again, kind of. You could draw the parallel almost to Mr. Rager, to his character, and the way that that character has this kind of street art.
His hair was like
spray paint. Exactly. And there's a parallel visual aesthetic there.
Yeah. It's interesting because I feel like Jabari's like persona, Mr. Rager, was so interesting and so visually. Like he was great, and I just feel like they didn't really do anything with that outside of some really cool visual, and not really jokes, because you know it was really fun. Like for example, when he was getting that quote unquote art advice, you saw Mr. Rager like on the chalkboard behind,
just getting really annoyed. Mr. These background images of Mr. Rager kind of functioning as a window into Jabari's id, or like how he's feeling. Like when Jabari is getting is like first meets his ex in the very beginning of the movie before he even meets Meadow, he runs into his ex again, and his ex is kind of like hooks up with him. But like there's a point in their conversation where Mr. Rager's in the background, like doing the bad idea. Yeah. And that's when like literally within the first 10 minutes of the film, Jabari has already told his ex, we should just be friends. And they've agreed to try and just be friends.
Yeah, that was a messy situation. They didn't really explore. And that was a lot of the movie. And later became a couple major plot points in the movie. And it would have I don't know. It was just messy. He's walking out of that interaction not really looking like a great guy. Mm-hmm. His ex was trying real hard. I liked his ex. Mm-hmm. He was kind of... Yeah. I don't want to say cruel. That sounds a little harsh, but you know.
Dumb person in their 20s.
Yeah, dumb 20s. Yeah. He's being real dumb about that. And so that was disappointing. But it's funny because usually when characters are introduced with character flaws, it's usually the movie then that, you know, helps them understand and change that flaw, you know? Yeah.
But this protagonist learns a lesson.
Didn't really do that.
Yeah, no, the central conflict the film revolves around throughout the climax is this misunderstanding where, you know, Meadow thinks that Jabari hooked up with Carmen, but Jabari didn't hook up with Carmen. Jabari just went to Carmen's house to help her with a rat problem.
Yeah, but the costume design was so good. The costume design was amazing. Like, one, I loved Meadow's agent. Like, all of his costumes were just like...
Yeah, you caught that he was like wearing a Gucci or something?
He was wearing like one. He was like up until the moment when he was wearing this sweater. He was wearing like tech bro suit. Yeah,
Meadow's very pretentious agent.
Who's like really into Bitcoin and like, yeah. He's amazing. I hate him so much. He's amazing. I think in the later scene, one of the later scenes, he's wearing a Yves Saint Laurent sweatshirt.
That's what it was. Yves Saint Laurent, yeah.
But what I really like about it is like, I'm not super into fashion, but what I do know about fashion is that if you have an incredible amount of money, you do not wear logos. But if you don't have that much money, but want to look like you have a lot of money, you wear logos everywhere. And that's like, that's what that was. And yeah. It made me so happy because he's like this tech bro that's like super into Bitcoin and trying to like pretend like he's bigger than he is. And he's got all these giant logos everywhere of haute couture. And I was like, he's such a jerk. I love him.
A lot of the characters did feel very true to life. Like it's interesting. The Meadow felt very much like a fantasy character. I hate to bag on it like that, but even like, you know, she's into his art and wants him to make sure that he keeps Mr. Rager the way Mr. Rager should be. And then she kind of becomes his muse. And then like he opens with negging and it works, right? The morning after the party, when she's like, you know, she's coming over to apologize to him for having had the music loud. And he's like, well, I'm not going to feel mad at you about partying, but I might be mad about your music choices. And that's like...
And she's like, oh, my music choices.
Yeah. Like that word. Like, she, Meadow reads very much like a fantasy. And like, Meadow's friend is cool, but also feels like what a guy who hasn't actually been in the room with two women who are friends imagines what like a supportive friend is like.
Are you saying that because like about 50% of the conversations between the two of them had to do with how large their boyfriend's instruments were?
No, that wasn't. I don't think it was 50% because 95% of their conversations were about Jabari and about how, Meadow should follow her punan and just bang Jabari. Like that's, but... You know, but outside of those two characters, the tech bro, it feels like Kid Cudi has met a tech bro or two. It feels like Kid Cudi has like had the rapper's best buds that are like really into weed and partying. It feels like Kid Cudi has met like some of these artists that like the New York art lady that's sharing the exhibit with exhibit space with Meadow.
Yeah.
Like some of these characters feel like very genuinely great. Experienced.
The skaters.
People. Yeah. The skater kids and stuff like that.
Yeah. Those are all really, really fantastic. And you're right. They felt very distinct in a really, really true to life way.
Whereas Meadow feels to me like a fantasy about what the writer's fantasy of, man, I really just wish there was like a girl who was like nice and real, you know?
Yeah.
Like she feels like that fantasy, and it makes it harder. That and the fact that the whole movie revolves around like a misunderstanding about a text.
Well, don't forget a good like 20 minutes of that movie was about like whether or not the two of them were going to sleep with each other. And it was just like, yeah, I think they yeah.
That's the point of this movie, right?
But the light was so cool. Yeah. Like when he would like light up his like lighter and there was that 2D lighter effect.
Or when they would light up the lighter inside her dark room, and because the people writing this movie are a rapper and a writer and they are not consulting photographers, that's a thing that they just do.
Yeah. I don't think you're supposed to. I don't know if any of those fire, chemicals are flammable. You know,
fire does this thing that it,
yeah.
Fire does this thing that emits light. Which you don't want to do in a dark room. Sorry. But like, I do really want to give this movie its due. Like, if you like rom-coms, but, you know, like, oh man, the cityscapes, the like everything visual about this film. And if honestly, sit there and take photos.
Oh, speaking of visuals though, I will say the one thing that I found interesting is I feel like they watched Into the Spider-Verse and wanted to have a little bit more of that jittered effect to the character animation.
That kind of stop and go comic book homage thing that Into the Spider-Verse did, especially in the first like 20 minutes of the film.
Yeah, but they didn't really do it as well. And it feels like they weren't as good at selecting the important poses and exaggerating those and kind of like prioritizing those. It felt more like, especially with certain scene, like whole scenes where they would just erase like every other frame to make it feel jittery, when it was like the reason that they'd done that in Into the Spider-Verse was for clarity.
Well, and it was also a comic book homage, which this film didn't, you know. But the other thing, and the interesting thing about that, now that you pointed out, because it did feel like it had that jumping kind of feel that was a little bit visually disorienting. And when I was watching it the first time, it felt like they were skipping more frames than Into the Spider-Verse did. But I don't know if that actually happened, or if it was, or if that was like the emotional effect from having the jumping be that constant.
Agreed.
Well, like what goes into your perceptions of a film?
Yes. Yeah. I think I actually have a note here as well that it's like, it's less Into the Spider-Verse and more like Peanuts. Like, did you ever see Peanuts? I think I started that for you once and it was just like, well, this is adorable, but let's go get dinner. But it was just one of, I feel like Peanuts actually kind of established that jitter animation as a realistic style or as a actionable style, something you could do. And then it was just taken to the next level with Spider-Verse. But yeah. But this, well, it's like it was trying to do it, but it wasn't succeeding nearly as well as Peanuts or Spider-Verse. Speaking of, I hope they're doing well on the sequel to that, because goodness knows,
that's a pressure's on, man. That's a pressure's on, because that is a really good movie.
Really good editing, too. There's so many good little edit cuts, like one of the edits where he's like partying hardcore, and then he like sloshes forward from drinking too much.
And
it cuts to him at the corporate office.
Face down on his desk. That was the next morning with Hangover. That was really good. Also, underappreciated, whoever the creative mind was behind the vagina party. I don't know. I don't like somebody came up with that. I don't know if that's like a true to life thing that Kid Cudi's been to something like this, but like after he's gone on his like accidental first date with the with Meadow, Jabari goes to a party, and that party is like this super art house being put on by, you know, a very, you know, avant-garde feminist art lady, and like everything in the party is a vagina.
Yes,
like
they have macaroons.
Vagina-shaped macaroons, vagina-shaped like chairs that they're sitting in. They're like two guys from the Blue Man Group, like dressed up as vaginas that keep like kind of sashaying back and forth through the background.
Oh, it was the Beyonce
sequence.
Dancers.
Oh, that's right.
They're Beyonce dancers.
Yeah, they're like wiggling their way back and forth across the screen in the background while characters are talking. It's amazing.
No, the
vagina party is like
when you enter giant legs.
Oh yeah, they're entering through the giant legs from like Patch Adams. Like. And one of the most disappointing things that happens in the movie is, like, when, you know, Meadow randomly shows up at the party because it's part of her art circuit, and her agent leaves her, and she's at the bar drinking, and Jabari sees her, and they have the little will they, won't they, and then his friend pushes him to go talk to her, and he goes up and talks to her, and they talk for a minute, and then they're like, man, this party just isn't my scene. You want to get out of here? And I'm like, no, don't get out of here. This party is amazing.
And the best part of this movie.
Like, a woman wearing a vagina hat is now chasing a man dressed as a penis across the floor and assaulting him because no dicks in here. Who would leave this party? This party is amazing.
I'm not going to lie. That party was so much more entertaining than all the parties before it. Like, I see that there is a lot of love put into the parties before it in terms of, like, visual style and dancing and really cool
club scene.
Club scene. But, like, the most memorable, hilarious, and amazing thing was, like, it was almost like commentary on, like, the art scene of New York of just sort of, like, it is both so, like, what happens when people are trying so hard. And whether or not it's working is, like, kind of subjective.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it is just trying so hard.
And it's fun to see things taken to that degree of extreme.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was an excellent part of that.
Yep.
Yeah. Gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous movie. Background artists, phenomenal.
Yeah.
Character painters, phenomenal.
Also, as a fan of the, like, Deadpool comics of the 90s, I will give them credit for Meadow's line to Jabari about it's really cool they're making your character into a comic, but like just don't let them Deadpool your shit up, you know? Like I have opinions about the Deadpool movie, that's for an entirely different
movie. Do you want to watch the Deadpool movie later?
At some point.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's see, anything else?
I think that's all my notes.
Yeah, I have a small note of, you know, great transition to chapter two. Like, going between all the transitions was really, really cool. And then one of my last notes is just like, man, the kissing looks pretty good for, like, 3D animation.
Mm-hmm.
That can look weird, and it looked okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, good job, guys.